Welcome to episode 2 of The Round Ball with Hedo, Seva and Andy Burnell. Andy Burnell, welcome, mate.
Good to be back, mate. It's really exciting. I've been looking forward to this second episode. And it's, you know, the podcast forum is not an easy one, especially when we're doing it, you know, from different locations. But, you know, I was pleased with the initial one. We will get better and slicker, and we're not going anywhere. So I'm really looking forward to today's show. And continuing our journey, my man.
We've got some good talking points today, but we also had some pretty good feedback from our first show. And as you said, we're recording from bedrooms. We're recording from all sorts of places in houses. So we had some good feedback for what we got through.
I think so, yeah. And you know, particularly you know, the fact that we can look forward to the three of us being in a studio together at some point is really exciting. It'll make things a lot easier, but you know, what doesn't change is the dialogue and the content, and you know we will continue to bring, you know, unfiltered and what I consider, you know, ongoing unparalleled, you know, analysis of football, not only in Australia but globally.
And that's what we're about. Now, Seva sends his apologies today. He's got a couple of big jobs at work on, so he sends his apologies. So Seva, thanks, mate. But we'll see you next. We'll obviously see him next episode. Now, today's podcast is brought to you by Mate Internet and Mobile. Choose a provider you can trust like a mate. Visit letsbemates.com.au for more. And you can see my man, Matty Ryan, who was in goals for the Socceroos earlier in the week, just hanging out right next to me. So, Birch, while we're on that, we're going to review the Socceroos match the other night against Vietnam. Now, we obviously won 3 points. So it was a good sort of international window for us. I think we can say that, yeah?
Look, I think let's go positives.
Hit me with them first.
3 points, you know, an away game that's not easy. In trying and difficult conditions, but not insurmountable conditions. And I don't think it was one of our finest performances, and even Graham Arnold admitted that. But sometimes you have to win ugly, and we won ugly, and we got to 3 points, and we have 6 points after 2 matches. So you really can't ask for more than that. Can we be a little critical of, you know, the tactics employed throughout the whole match? You know, there's certain things that I was a little, you know, bamboozled by in terms of, you know, not maybe changing it up a little bit.
So we've got the formation, right? And you're a good analyst on that sort of stuff, right? So set up 4-3-3 initially. Basically, Vietnam reversed in a bus and just put it in front of us. Should we have set up differently at times for, say, 10-15-minute periods?
Look, I think the initial setup is kind of what we've been doing for many years. So, you know, the beginning period is a continuation of what's been done before. The Vietnamese coach should be ashamed of himself the first half. They didn't even.
I've got to talk about him later on, actually. I've got something for him.
You know, they, you know, every bus in Hanoi, mate, was moved in and parked, you know, there in that first half. But we as a football nation, again, we won ugly and we got to 3 points. But I was particularly puzzled by how poor our set pieces were. I mean, you know, we had an aerial advantage, a physical advantage against that side.
And we've still got Harry Suter at the centre, at the back, right? So he's not losing a header.
And we weren't capable, even in general play, of really whipping in dangerous balls that troubled their keeper and centre halves. And that for me was a problem, because you can have an off day. You can be not at the races. You can win ugly. But when you play the better nations in the group, you want to have your corners and free kicks and you know, things coming into the box pretty spot on. You know, and you know, that probably didn't help or wasn't helped by the formation at times tactically. Yeah. You know, I think it could have been a little better to help with the poorness of crosses and set pieces into our box.
And you and I were talking basically while the game was happening in the next day that we didn't have, it didn't seem like we had enough bodies in the box. Tommy Rogic was picking the ball up on the sideline and had no one to hit. Tommy's going to pick the ball up, he's going to whip across in, yeah?
Well, we don't have a lot of height up front anyway, right? Yeah. You know, since the days of Viduka and even Big Kennedy, you know, we had something to hit up there. We don't seem to have that height advantage now. And it seemed like the taller boys from midfield that could make those dangerous runs in, the Timmy Cahill runs into the box, weren't making those runs.
Yeah, and so, I think that's what we needed, especially to break down that bus, right? We needed those runs into the box, late runs, just everyone in there.
Well, the bus or two buses or three buses are very hard to break down. You know, Spain, Brazil, Argentina would find it hard to, you know, eventually they will make a mistake, you know, as they did. It was poor defending, and we scored. But it's not an easy process, you know, to break down, you know, people parking buses, you know, and even the greater nations find that. So why not for 10, 15 minutes send out a message and say, we're going to change this up. We're going to go a little bit more direct. We're going to have people running off, you know, Targetman. We're going to throw him up front. We're going to, you three, as soon as the ball gets wide, you're going to ping it into the penalty spot, and you three midfielders are going to bomb in there.
Yeah, and I think that's obviously what we miss. Now, Mark Schwartz has come out swinging, and you know Mark personally.
Yes.
And you've helped him. You've been mates with him for a long time. But he's come out swinging in regards to the critics saying, basically saying, you know, get off the Socceroos' back. They've won all these matches in a row, and they got the win. Now, we're not criticising the Socceroos here. We're saying they got the 3 points. Good on them. What this conversation is about is, when we come up against the big nations, Saudi Arabia, Japan, etc., should we have been practicing some certain other formations in a game like that once we got the goal? Because we got the goal just before halftime. Should we have set up maybe a little bit differently at times in the second half to practice those formations moving forward?
I don't think I don't think the time for practicing formations was in a World Cup qualifier against Vietnam.
No, of course.
So, you know, those things should have been discussed or worked on or practiced, in previous camps, so that if a message is sent out from Arnie at a particular time in the match.
So can I ask you then, why wasn't that message sent out then? Why didn't we change it up?
You know, you'll have to ask Graeme Arnold that.
Okay.
You know, I can't answer that. I can only tell you, and you ask me from my experience, yep. I would have done certain things and changed it up a little bit. Just to maybe give them something to think about, because they didn't really have anything to think about. They were just sitting back and trying to get us on the break. And luckily for us, their star player missed a real, real good chance.
Yeah.
And, you know, on another night, they could have had a penalty as well.
Yes.
Again, Schwartzy has come into bat for the boys, and we're batting for the boys too. There's nothing, you know, not constructive with saying or critical about saying, you know, we won ugly. We won. Fantastic. We're Aussies. We want our national team to win. But we also want to make our national team better. And if it means, you know, bringing up points that I think, that we think could have made the side better, then that's, you know, it's constructive criticism. And, you know, Arnie and everybody are big enough to take that, you know. So, you know, the conditions, you know, you brought it up the other day, you know, and I'm not really having...
Because he did also bring up the conditions and how would you like to play, understand the conditions. And I think I said to you, but we play in the summer now. The A-League's been playing in the summer from day dot, yeah? So I don't think we can start using conditions anymore as an excuse, especially when we'll bring up later. But your man, Ryan Grant, from Australia, playing in the A-League, ran for 90 minutes again.
Exactly. You know, and a lot of it comes down to desire and willingness to want to do things. And, you know, like you said, the conditions, you know, the pitch, it was equally as good or bad for both teams.
Both teams.
The heat and humidity. As Australians, I remember in 1984 playing in my first Merlion Cup at age 17, 18. So those conditions are not new to Australian footballers, to national team players. We, you know, many of that team have played in Asia before. So there's nothing new there. Okay. The pitch, get used to it.
Yeah, absolutely.
It is what it is.
It's for both teams, like we've said.
Yeah. What if it's raining? Do we complain as well if it's a bit waterlogged? If it's wet? Yeah. Do I have my screw-in studs? Do I not? Just you know, terrible excuses. It wasn't our best game. We won ugly. 3 points. Move on to the next one.
And it could be a big 3 points in the. It could be a big 3 points. Come the end of the qualifying period as well, you know, because Japan have struggled a little bit, and we also are going to talk about that they only beat China 1-0. So, like, are we like? Yes, we're being critical, but we're also being positive to them as well, you know.
I mean, we beat China 3-0.
3-0. That's right.
And Japan only beat China 1-0. You know, they're points we can bring up, but in the end, they don't really mean.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, China were terrible against us. I haven't seen their game against Japan, but they could only get better.
Well, you hope so, don't you?
You would hope that they could get better. And
Peking duck at half.
No Peking ducks at halftime, and certainly, you know, a good roasting from the manager, because if I was him, you know, I would have put every single one of those players on notice, and himself. You're on notice. Because that performance was embarrassing from your nation. And, you know, they've obviously come out and performed better or so by the result. You know, it seems that they performed better than they did against Australia. But, look, at the end of the day. Look,
let's put it down to a good six points for the international break. Yeah, we beat China, we beat Vietnam, we move on. But we also have to, like, together, this is what we've spoken about. What we're going to do is bring up the points that need to be discussed. Yeah. Because you can't get a pat on the back all the time.
No, I just think, you know, even in on days when you're not that crash hot, you know, you can't get your set pieces right.
Yeah, that's
that we looked amateurish with them. Like it was, there was one that Rustic took from the left that went, you know, way beyond the far post.
Yeah, and sort of ran near post.
To nobody, you know, and we've like, where was it meant to be? Where was it going? And it was like that all night, you know. I have my ideas on, you know, when you play a nation like that on set pieces.
But look, anyway, let's leave that conversation there. And again, positive, 3 points. We'll move on. We've made our discussion points. Now, you've been very prevalent this week on social media, Birch, and I want you to give me your Roy Keane Award for this week. So who's not getting on the bus for the coach killer? And I dare say it's the boy that you've tagged on social media this week, yeah?
Oh, the Vietnamese superstar. I think he's number 17. You know, shocking, you know, for, you know, when the Australians scored the goal and Rustic whipped in a beautiful cross. You know, I had a go at him before for the corner. But, you know, he put in a beautiful cross. But the pressure onto the ball from the Vietnamese was shocking. This superstar of Vietnamese football has run at the ball in second gear and done a twirl in midair like he's Baryshnikov or Nureyev, you know, at the London Ballet. And turned his back completely on Rustic's delivery.
Yeah.
Now, mate, you got to take that on the chest, on the face, anywhere. Dive at that ball. I don't care if you dive at it as a diving header. Get your body, any part of it, in the way of that cross.
100%.
Yeah, because the cross ended up with Ryan Grant and ended up in the back of your net, son.
Well, look, I'm going to give mine, yeah, and I think the coach can give himself the coach killer. Like reversing, as you said before, every bus from Hanoi into that stadium and putting it wherever he could. Like play some football. You got some good footballers there. Give the boys a bit of a go. Yes, they caught us on the break a bit, but come on, man. Like seriously.
I totally agree with you. It was, you know, I think he's been manager of South Korea before. He was embarrassing, you know, and if I was one of his players, I'd be upset because, you know, you have no points. Do you want to qualify for the World Cup? Do you want to actually qualify or do you just want to park buses and try and make, you know, any loss that you have somewhat respectable.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't matter. Losing with respect, you know, going out and playing football and losing to Australia has, gives you more respect on what you did, because all you did is park a bus, you know, yeah. Parked the whole lot of Hanoi in there. And it was, you know, the second half, like you said, they tried to play. They've got some nice, tidy players. And as we tired, they caused us some problems, you know, throughout the game. I would say that overall they had the best chances.
Yeah, well, your man should have. Your man probably should have. Although he did some twirling, he probably should have scored a couple.
He should have. Yeah, you know, and you know, they need to calm down on the superstar label, because you know he didn't do anything on the.
I think they've labeled him the Vietnamese Messi. I think that's what they were calling him, weren't they?
And here's a message for that young man, Messi. Over the past 10 years at Barcelona. Had the highest percentage of first recovery after Barcelona had lost the ball.
Yeah.
So once they'd lost the ball, it was Messi around 75% of the time that won the first ball back.
Yeah. And
that's why he's a superstar.
And that's why they pay him what he pays. They pay him, right? All right. Now give me Jürgen's hug. Who's Jürgen's hug going to this week for you?
Look, I think Ryan Grant, you know, he'd come off not playing for a long time, you know, the only A-League player there. But Ryan, you get a good, solid performance week in, week out. The consistency is there all the time. You know, it's not a magic performance or a really poor performance. As a manager, he's one of your first picked.
Yeah, I agree. I do agree with you there 100%. Like, we're talking about heat. We're talking about he ran and ran and ran up and down that touchline all day, yeah? And I think he deserved his goal. I think it was a well-taken goal in the end as well.
Yeah, he was apparently I heard somewhere that he was thinking of heading it back across the goal. You know, well done to him for putting it back in the back of the net. He thoroughly deserved that. You know, I can see him scoring more goals for the Socceroos. But well done, Ryan. You personified a great work ethic and a great, you know, mental attitude towards, you know, a difficult task, a difficult game. And for that, mate, respect.
Yeah, and my Jürgen hug is going to go to Matty Ryan. I thought he did his job. He hadn't been playing that often over in Spain. He's come back from a knee injury, and I thought he marshalled his troops pretty well. Wasn't really tested. He was at times, but he did his job, all he needed to do, and obviously kept a clean sheet. So I'm going to give it to Matty Ryan, and hopefully now moving forward he can get some game time under his belt for his club side, and then when we go back into international break again, he's fully fit, ready to go.
Yep, I think... this second round of qualifiers, the ante will be up a little bit now.
Yep.
And let's see. You know, we've got 6 points.
We
have to be confident and positive from here in. And again, we're not here knocking a national team. We love that Australia win and that we have 6 points. But we will bring up things that we believe we could be better at. And, you know, that's how it is.
Yeah, no, and again, congratulations, 6 points over that time. The boys will all go back to their club sides and hopefully put in a good few shifts and come back for international break ready to go. Now, Birch, this week's clubs that we're going to look at are Perth Glory and Wellington Phoenix. So the long distance derby, as we like to call it, although now Wellington are basically parking themselves in Australia due to COVID. So they'll obviously be parked out here when the season starts. Start with Perth Glory, mate. Have you got a player to watch over there?
I have. And I'm going to go into SBS mode. I've got Adrián Sardinero, who's a Spaniard, who they've signed as one of their imports this season. I don't know too much about him.
Yep.
But his stats tell me, and I had them written down here, his stats tell me 41 goals in 13 years as a professional. Half of those 41 was scored in Cyprus. And his last season was in Greece, where he scored 6 goals. So over 13 years, 41 goals. It's not prolific, to say the least. And, you know, if he proves me wrong and scores 25, 30 goals this season in our A-League, it's going to tell you more about our A-League.
I'm still not sure whether Diego Castro is – he hasn't re-signed yet. I think he's still over in Perth, but they haven't announced whether he's properly re-signed yet. So I think they'll need some goals from somewhere as well, right?
They will, you know, but I don't know. I'm not in the business of being a director of football or CEO of A-League clubs at the moment. I hope he's a superstar and he's a star for Perth Glory.
Yeah.
Hasn't set the world on fire in Europe. You know, that's why he's here. Yeah. And, you know, there's certainly, the point I'm making is, you know, we're not really dealing in marquee players here.
Yeah.
You know? And I'll mention.
We'll bring that up in our next segment as well. Yeah. We've got a point to make about that.
You know, certainly not marquee players. Right. With my other player.
Yeah, from Wellington.
Wellington Phoenix is Gary Hooper. Yeah. I know Gary from the days when I'd taken Tommy Rogic to Celtic. And Gary, on the other hand, has been quite prolific, almost a goal, you know, per every two matches. You know, and I'm talking, I had some stats here, 63 goals at Celtic, 24 at Sheffield Wednesday, 18 at Norwich, 21 in the last year at Wellington Phoenix. 8 goals in 21 matches last year. And so it's nearly one goal every two matches,
yep.
Which is a way better goal-scoring record than Sardi Nero. But
and they're going to need him too with their issues around travel and not being in New Zealand and basing themselves in Australia if the bubble doesn't get on. They're going to need his goals, I think,
exactly.
This year.
Exactly. And he's a proven goal scorer. He should be able to, if he doesn't score, 20 goals every season in the A-League, as the Wellington Phoenix, I'd be upset with his return. Yeah.
So I'm running with Joshua Soterio from the Wellington Phoenix. He's been in the A-League a long time now, and he's probably just needs to lift his consistency a bit. But if he can get his consistency right, I still think he can be a gun player, and especially around those blokes like Hooper and Taylor at the back marshalling them. I think if he can get consistency in his game, I'm sure he can be a standout, and he's still young enough to produce. I think his best football's in front of him. So let's wait and see about that. Now, I've got a player to watch over in Perth, Birch, and I want to get your opinion on it. So Brad Jones has come back to Perth, and he's going to push Liam Reddy for first choice keeper, or do you think he's come back and he is the first choice keeper? What do you think? Because I'm a bit confused about why Perth would sign Brad Jones when Liam Reddy's been a stalwart of the club.
If I was Liam Reddy, I'd be pissed off, and if certainly he's been a fantastic, key figure, key asset for Perth the last few years. Liam's been fantastic for them. And, the city's embraced him. He's embraced Perth. And to bring in Brad Jones or any other keeper, I think it's a kick in the teeth to Liam. For me, why? Unless you're wanting to really get rid of Liam, and I don't know if that's the case or not, but that's the only reason you would bring in.
And look, this isn't we're not taking a swing at Brad Jones here or anything. He's probably done his time overseas, and he wants to come back and live in Perth. But the question around it is team harmony for me. Liam Reddy looks like he's a big personality in a shed where he gets the boys up and about, no doubt, you don't really want to mess with team harmony in my eyes. Am I a bit off the mark there, do you think?
No, I think you're spot on. I think you're spot on. And one of the greatest tasks for managers at any level is having that key harmony
and
having certain players that are leaders of men within a dressing room.
Yep.
I don't know Brad Jones, so I can't tell you on that level.
Yeah.
But I know
Look, he's a good keeper. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying he's not, and he is. He's been proven, you know, he's played at some big clubs and whatever else. It's more on my side, like I just said, about team harmony. And it looks like, you know, Liam's done his time and he's been a stalwart of that club. That was my question to you, and you understand it.
Liam's a leader of men, and he's been fantastic for Perth. And again, you know, I don't know the reasons why they've decided to bring Brad Jones in. I'm not questioning his quality at all.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that if I was Liam Reddy, I'd be pissed off.
Yeah. So, lads, we've got those four to look out for. Hopefully we don't put the mock on them, Birch, and we can see how those boys are going to go throughout the 21-22 A-League season. I want to chat to you now about the new PFA bargaining agreement and some issues, not some issues, just your opinion on how you think it's gone down. Is it going to be good for the clubs? Are the clubs being pushed into a corner, or is it good for them? And are we still going to be talking about the three clubs owning the Newcastle Jets in the league, or is that just going to, hopefully someone's going to come and buy the Newcastle Jets soon?
Look, I think, in the first instance, I think the greatest winner out of the collective bargaining agreement is women's football.
Yeah.
You know.
And well deserved too, right?
Yeah. The girls are finally, getting into a situation where they become full-time professionals and they're looked after well by their clubs. They can earn a decent living, semi-decent living from football. And they're a winner of it. I'm not sure, you know, I kind of feel like the PFA and the APL are a little bit in bed together. And, you know, the last thing you want is a union, you know, running your organization or your business. But I don't know the ins and outs of, you know, the specific ins and outs of the whole agreement. But, you know, I suppose in the end, it's good for football. You know, it seems to me like everybody within the game has the ability now to earn a little bit more money.
Yeah, and it looks like they're putting a lot of money back into facilities and behind the scenes stuff for each club. You know, so making it a better professional environment than it is, and also allowing clubs to spend a bit more outside of the salary cap, so we can speak about those top tier players, like you just spoke about your guy from Perth, how you're saying he's not in that upper echelon. Well, now maybe moving forward, we can find those Del Piero's, Shinji Ono's, you know.
Through this agreement, it may allow for that. You know, when you talk marquees, you talk Dwight York.
Yeah.
You talk Thierry Henry. You talk Beckham. You talk, Keane.
Ibrahimovic.
You know, did I mention Del Piero? Yes. Yeah. You know, of that ilk.
Yes.
You know, not second, third rate footballers that are coming out to Australia. And, you know, they're still decent players. But the reality is, and if you're coming to Australia, you know, it's because you can't find a club in your homeland.
Yeah.
You know, or on the continent of Europe or in the MLS or in Asia. You're coming here.
Yeah.
Marquees for me are people that, you know, have been top 10, top 20 in the world that can fill a stadium like Del Piero. You know,
and
20,000 people are going to that stadium to just watch the man walk out onto the pitch.
100%. They're all buying his jersey too.
Yes, yes.
You know, so look, let's hope that bargaining agreement can do. And let's look, we still need someone, in my opinion, to buy the Newcastle Jets. You know, I don't think it's right that three clubs in the league are owning it. And yes, I understand why, don't get me wrong, but like, I still think it's just a bad look on part of the league.
100%. You know, that can't be allowed to go on. It's the biggest conflict of interest ever.
Mm.
What if one of those clubs that own Newcastle Jets are playing the Newcastle Jets in a game?
To
make the finals, yep. Guess what? The Newcastle Jets aren't winning that match.
Well, and
I'm telling you, they're not winning that match.
I'm not disagreeing with you there at all. And that's the look you don't want, you know, coming finals time. You don't want that, to
be
honest.
Can you imagine Chelsea Man City and Man United owning Arsenal.
Yeah, it's just not going to work, is it?
It's ridiculous. It doesn't happen and shouldn't happen. And the quicker they fix that up, the better. You know, and I'm not anti-APL. I'm not anti-PFA. You know, they're towards the end of this month, they've agreed to, you know, endorse my journey and my story.
Yeah,
so,
brilliant.
You know, it's we're not anti anyone here. We're just trying to make the game better. And that, to me, is a major conflict of interest and needs to be fixed.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong. I do understand why those three clubs are keeping the Newcastle Jets afloat in a league that needs a team in Newcastle. So we're not sticking the boot in. We're just talking about perception here and how it's perceived, you know, in and around footballing world, you know?
And you know what, Hedda? If they can keep the Newcastle Jets afloat in Newcastle, why can't they have a team in Canberra and fund it? If you're funding one, why can't you fund another one here in Canberra, in the nation's capital?
Good point, mate. You know, and it's another talking point, isn't it?
It's just, you know, it's ludicrous. You know, one of the only nations on the planet whose national capital is not represented.
Yeah. And you've got a women's team down there, right?
Yes. So
that just competes, obviously, that competes really well as well.
Got a W League team and no A League team, you know, and we're looking for equality in all sports, in everything. Where's the equality here for the men?
Yeah, mate, perfect talking point. Now, before we get on to Gus Hiddink and the role you played it's in your book, I want to talk to you about, again, the human headlines themselves, Ronaldo and Messi. We spoke about them both in depth last week. Messi then goes and scores a hat-trick. Another, Meg's the guy on the edge of the box, sticks it top corner, bang. Ronaldo back, the homecoming, as all the Man United fans are calling it, and scores a double. You know, it's just, they're prolific, Birch. They just, it's non-stop for them.
I'm not surprised. You know, I'm not surprised when you, I've been fortunate to see them up close. I've been fortunate to be given stats and data on their physiological, you know, ability.
Yeah.
And it doesn't surprise me. You know, you're talking about technically of the most gifted ever.
Yeah.
And physically, you know, just, you know, Olympic Games gold medal level athletes.
Yeah.
You know, guys.
Well, you look at that second goal that Ronaldo scored, right? He's 36, outpacing that centre back. He's much quicker already.
Quicker, and these two guys see things before other. You know, they're seeing things that you know in slow motion.
Yeah.
You know, I once asked Ronaldo Nazario, you know, what he saw, you know, when he, you know, run away from people and he's like 30 yards out, you know, and he's one on one with the goalkeeper, because myself and most humans, you know, as a defender, you know, I'm in one of those positions. I get really excited and it kind of, at one point, it becomes a blur.
Yeah.
And these superstars see it almost in slow motion.
Yeah, okay.
So they're going really, really fast, as you see. But their brain is seeing it. You know, they see a picture of slow motion.
Yeah, and they know what's going to happen, where to put it, everything.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm not surprised that those two players are continuing to excel on the world stage, you know, and just like I said, they have the brains that put puzzles together under pressure. They have an impeccable technique and, you know, just physiological attributes that people, unless you're in football and unless you're around them, you have no idea of the speed, you know, and agility testing that these guys, you know, come up with. You know, Messi's 20-meter sprint from a standing start is faster than the ever recorded time at an NFL draft.
Yeah.
You know, people, you know, don't understand that. You know, I get a lot of parents saying, oh, my son, he play like Messi. he play like Xavi, he play like Iniesta. No, he doesn't.
No.
Like, no,
you have to be really good to even play anything like that.
Yeah. One, he doesn't play like them. And two, you know, Iniesta and Xavi have the VO2 max of Olympic Games, you know, 1500 meter runners, you know, 5000 meter runners.
That's right. And they don't stop for 90 minutes.
Exactly.
You know,
at fast paces. So, you know, there's a, there's a whole lot more behind, you know, Ronaldo and the hair gel and Messi than what.
But he's also a brand, Ronaldo. Like, you look at his shirt sales for the last couple of weeks, Birch. It's just astronomical. Like, they've nearly paid. Although, yes, United don't get every single dollar from the shirt sales. I understand that, but it's going very close to paying off that whatever they're paying him already.
It'll pay it off quickly. And I think it was a reporter on someone on Fox Sports the other day. Yeah, it was a, you know, it wasn't a great signing. Please. Can you come on again and tell me it's not a great signing?
Yeah.
You
need scores to come two on. Two on debut.
Yeah. And sold $100 million worth of shirts already. Sure. And that's not a good signing. You know, and
at a full Old Trafford.
And you can see what his presence is bringing to the rest of the players. It's like, the only thing I can compare it to is Valdano when he talked to me about Diego Maradona and playing next to Diego in that World Cup. He just said, we knew we were going to win. You know, we'd look at the little man and, like, there was no way we were not going to win the World Cup. Yeah. And it's a little bit like, you know, those other 10 boys, players, you know, running out there with CR7. You know, it's a very empowering moment. And, you know, I don't care if it's Fox or Optus or whoever. I'm going to call you out because that's the dumbest thing you've ever said.
We don't need that dumb stuff floating around because I think he's proven already, he hadn't been at training that long. He left Portugal early to go and have a few sessions with United, and he's starting up front, right? And just, I know it's only a tap in, his first goal, and then he's run away from those defenders. I think, as much as I'm not a Man United fan, it's looking very good for United moving forward if he can keep up what he's doing in that dressing room.
Look, his presence empowers the rest. He'll score goals. That's what I mean. You know, we spoke briefly about, you know, foreigners coming to Australia and, you know, playing it at, whether it's Perth Glory, Wellington, whatever team. Yep. Where are the goals?
Yeah.
Show me the goals. Don't talk goals. Don't, you know, if you can show me goals in the A-League, 20, 25 goals per season, you're a good boy.
Yeah.
You know, and Ronaldo is, you know, you invest money, he brings you goals.
Yeah.
And there's a million experts out there, you know, that can say this and that. But at the end of the day, like with Messi, the stats, these guys let the stats do the talking.
So, they don't need to talk in the media.
No. So for someone on a media outlet to say, you know, I don't believe it's a great buy, you know, please, someone that's never actually, who doesn't know him, who's never been around him, who's never been a footballer, who's never played at that level, to say that's not a good buy, hasn't even been at a boardroom level or a marketing level, understanding the amount of shirts that are sold within a week.
And and cash drives a football club. Yeah. They can't just, it's not a bottomless pit at a football club like everyone thinks it is, you know?
No, you know, all these big clubs are run by billionaires, you know, but billionaires are business.
Yeah.
You know, and they're not billionaires because they're bad businessmen.
Yeah,
so,
that's,
you know,
right.
It drives it. And, you know, like when I went with Beckham to Real Madrid, you know, he deserved to be a Galactico. But what further enhanced that transfer was the marketing department.
Yeah. He sold shirts for a little, like, he just literally sold them.
Yes. So that's.
And it was like Beckham when he went to LA Galaxy, too, right? They nearly paid for his transfer fee in the first week with all the shirts that were sold.
Again, it's, you know, football, it's the biggest business on the planet.
Yeah. And it's,
you know, so, you know, I think, again, we mentioned it last week, both Cristiano Ronaldo and Lionel Messi are fantastic purchases in whatever capacity and in whatever manner the deals were done.
100%.
For those clubs, just great assets of the highest level on every level.
And make players around them better.
Yeah, I
think that's a good – and I think we can leave it there with one of their best assets is they make everyone else better as well.
Empower people.
Now, you said before that football is obviously the biggest business in the world. And during the week, Gus Hiddink retired from football, and he's one of those big assets to football. Now, in your book, Riding Shotgun, you talk about the 2006 World Cup and what you did as a scout for Gus in South America. Him retiring is a big loss for football in itself, yeah?
Look, can't argue with, you know, with his track record and the teams that he's managed. I don't know Gus.
Okay.
You know, I don't know him at all. I've never seen him work. I can only tell you what I see from afar. You know,
yeah.
I do know that along with Ron Smith, I spent 9 months in South America, in and out of the place, creating a dossier for Gus.
Yep.
So that when the boys turned up at ANZ Stadium, Birch and Smudger had done all the homework.
And you also did all the homework on every single possibility that was going to happen in regards to which team we'd be playing in South America. Is that right?
Well, that's correct. We looked at all of them, to be honest with you.
Yep.
But there was a top five that we thought, you know, it's going to be one of these. And you know, the report at the end of the scouting to Gus that Ron gave him was that our best chance of qualifying for that World Cup would be if Uruguay were our opponent.
Right, really?
Yes.
Okay.
So that was the report. You know, you just, there were places like Barranquilla, Colombia, where you didn't want to go. See, they decided years ago. They decided years ago that instead of playing in Bogota at altitude, it would be worse for visiting teams to play in Barranquilla in the Caribbean in 40-degree heat and 80% humidity.
Right.
So at the time that we would have played the leg in Colombia, we would have had boys flying in from an English winter into 40-degree heat.
Straight away.
80% humidity. And guess what? A bit. Not as nice as the Vietnamese. They wanted to play it at 4 p.m.
Oh, did they? So in the middle of the day.
Yeah. There you go.
So look, I will give, like, he did his job for Australian football. Yeah. Do you agree? I know you don't know him personally, but do you think he did his job for Australian football? And
of course,
well, he obviously did, right?
Of course he did. He had the lads that they call the golden generation.
Yeah.
And they qualified for our first World Cup since the 74 Socceroos, correct? Yes. So, of course he did his job, you know, and again, I can't comment on his coaching ability because I've never seen it. I wasn't there. I wasn't around it. But he certainly was able to empower and educate and you know, create a plan and put a process in play to guide that squad.
And Michael Thwaite tells us, we had Thwaite on earlier, one of our Hedo and Seva shows, and Thwaite said that to us. He just made you, he had an aura about him. He made you want to listen, and he created an environment, a footballing environment that everyone wanted to be in. He didn't care if who you were. He had no care for how much you were paid or how little you were paid. Everyone was treated equally. And I guess you can look at it from when he stuck Kewell on the bench at times. He stuck Timmy Cahill on the bench at times. Like, he told Viduka he needed to lose weight. Like, he actually made his presence felt from the highest paid to the lowest paid player.
And the good thing about at that particular time in Australian football, in our country, we needed someone like Gus because these boys were pretty much superstars in their own right, most of the squad. You know, they were big players playing in big clubs. So sometimes you need, for occasions like that, for a qualifying round, you know, occasion like that, you need a manager who is a big character as well.
Yeah.
You know, who has managed big clubs, big nations, because he can, you know, he commands that respect.
Respect, yes. Yeah. And he gets that respect from every single player.
Yes. You know, similar to, I used to talk to Ronaldo and Roberto Carlos about Del Bosque at Real Madrid, you know, and Ronnie would just say he's a beautiful man. You know, he's played 500 times for Real Madrid, 60 times for Spain, and he's a beautiful man. We do whatever we have to do for him.
Yeah, we'll run through brick walls for him.
Yeah, you know, and he commanded that respect. But that gets to a certain level where if the players are getting told stuff by someone that they don't, you know, feel they can respect, you're gone. You're dead in the water.
Yeah.
So and Gus for Australia at that particular point in time in our nation was probably the best choice. It's proven, you know. It is proven.
And I think his track record speaks for himself. And
much respect.
Another. I guess loss to football, and hopefully he's not lost. He can still part his wisdom on certain things, certain places around the world moving forward.
He's certainly played his part in the history of this nation, mate.
Yeah. Now, Birch, thanks for that. And that was a again, we gave our analysis, we gave our thoughts. Again, they're our opinions. So again, please don't be offended. They're just our opinions. Yes, we're being positive, but we're also bringing out what we think are some issues at times throughout, I guess, football, and what we see as, and you again, perfect analyst, and what you saw in the Socceroos game as well.
I think it, you know what, it's been a good week. It kind of feels like. Times are a bit strange here in Sydney and Canberra where we are, Pedo, and, you know, with all the COVID going around. But we, you know, it seems like Europe is buzzing with football at the moment. It the rest of the world seems to be happening.
Let us out. We're caged lions, aren't we?
Let us out. We really looking forward to continuing this journey, mate, and analysing football and bringing good analysis to the people of this nation, because there's a lot of fans out there that want to hear the real football talk, and I promise you we will give you the real football talk,
and we will. So, and this podcast can't happen without our wonderful sponsors. So MG Active, Logues and MG down there, they're doing, find them on social media. We'll do a post this week about them. They're doing a lot of Zoom classes and keeping everyone active in lockdown. So thanks for keeping on board, boys. Ignify Legal, Ian and the team at Ignify Legal. We've been tagging them on social media. So if you need anything, any legal advice, contact Ian and the team at Ignify Legal. Monster Clothing, as I said last week, have just come on board. So check them out for all cool clothes. And we've posted up some really cool videos. So check them out. Sensor Studios. Birch, how good is he? Our man behind there. He's a genius, isn't he?
Yeah, he's a genius. He's top man. And Jeff, thank you, mate. Thank you for making us look half decent. And I'm sure once we're in a studio setting, we'll come up really smick, mate, and do you proud, mate, because you know, a whole production team is a whole production is not just, you know, the people that you see on the screen. There's a lot of people behind it, sponsors, and Jeff at Sensor is fantastic. You know, the best in the business, you know. You know, let's continue to move on. And like I said, we're not here to take part, you know.
Absolutely. So thanks, Jeff. We appreciate that. And DS Tipping and Excavations for all your landscaping needs. Get in contact with Daniel Severino, who is still running with it each week, the best lay in Penrith. So, Seva, thank you, mate. And again, this episode is brought to you by Mate Internet and Mobile. Choose a provider you can trust like a mate. Visit lesbymates.com.au for more. And Birch, we'll see you next weekend, mate. Thank you again.
Adios, amigos.
Thanks, Birch.